The Green Box by Michael Bailey. His father worked frantically in the rain, gouging at the black soil with a broken wooden stave and his bare hands as he burrowed deep into the ground like an animal. He worked in darkness and without noise. As soon as he was up to his waist in the hole, he cradled the awkward bundle that had lain in the deeper shadow against the church wall and pushed it quickly down into the mud at his feet. He pulled the earth over it, burying his son as quickly as he had dug his grave. By morning, the stormwater had obliterated any sign of the recent digging, and those passing along the muddy path that ran beside the church wall noticed nothing. The boy's body was safe now, protected by the church from Satan and his demons, and by death from any further harm or disease. His spirit slept undisturbed. Great scoops of sandy orange earth were gouged by the digger's metal jaw. The hole next to the church in the high street widened, where the pavement cobbles had been dug away. Shoppers and market traders bustled past the unannounced obstruction as the workers took a tea break. A safety barrier in red and white plastic prevented pedestrians from falling into the excavation, while a stiff orange plastic sheet covered the trip hazard from road to pavement they had to cross. A burly man took over from the digger. His shovel blade bit into the darker earth at the bottom of the pit. A deeper channel was needed for the new internet and phone cable. It would carry it away from the junction box close to the church wall, out into the road to meet up with the pipes and cables already buried there. Another slice of soil was cleaved from the side of the earth wall and fell crumbling to the bottom. The workman who reached down into the earth had seen a yellow streak lying against the dark earth. "Look at this," he said. He held the bone up, turning it as he examined it. "Must be a dog, I guess." He laid it on the road at the edge of the hole and bent to dig his fingers into the loose dirt. "Here's another one. Must have been a big dog with legs this long." The foreman said tersely that he would look after the bones and that there was work to do. "So get on with it." By the end of the day, the bones had been passed to the local museum, the cables had been connected, and the paving bricks relaid on top of the filled-in excavation. A new, green-painted box alongside the church wall protected wires and switch equipment from the elements and curious schoolchildren. At the local telephone exchange, phone connections were rerouted to bring the newly installed equipment into service. Mrs. Clements was talking to her daughter, who lived down in the valley. She'd described the tribulations of her day and was settling comfortably into a well-rehearsed catalogue of the various failings of her ageing body when she was interrupted by a loud cry. She asked her daughter if she had the television tuned into one of those crime dramas she was so fond of. Before her daughter could reply, the cry of a child in pain startled them both. "What was that?" the old lady asked. "It must be a cross line," her daughter replied. "Ring off and I'll call you back." The telephone service provider received several complaints about interrupted calls and noises on the line. Several people in the town phoned the emergency services to report hearing a child in obvious distress when they lifted their telephone receiver to make a call. Tests were run on the wiring circuits. No faults were found, but the complaints of interference continued. Tom unfolded his aluminium stool and set it down in the shadow of the church wall. He adjusted the headphones over his ears and clipped the jaws of the contact wire onto the exposed metal junction. Instead of the quiet electronic hum he was used to, there was an empty silence as if he was listening to the depths of a well. He tried another circuit and another. Each time he had a sense of vertigo as the silence dragged him down. He shook his head to clear the sensation and eased the headphones away from his ears. The noise of the high street returned, a reassuring bustle of voices, footsteps and traffic. He bent his head towards the green box again and resettled the headset in place.
"Oh, it hurts so, sir. Please stop it hurting, I beg you."
The voice was a child's, a young boy. The pain and the fear were as clear as the words. Tom jumped up and the headphones were jerked from his ears by the wire clipped to the junction frame. He trembled as he unclipped the wire and threw the headset into his bag. He closed the green box and locked it, put his bag and folded stool in the van and slammed the door shut. He stood back, looking at the junction box. Feeling calmer, he was still sweating and breathing heavily. People waiting at the bus stop opposite, on the opposite side of the high street, saw the telephone engineer turn from his van and start to walk away from the church. One of them said afterwards that it was as if he had walked into a wall. He stopped suddenly. He clasped his hands to his head. Another lady was sure she heard him cry, "No, no, leave me alone." Others said he simply screamed as he fell to his knees. When the ambulance attendant cradled his head and shone torchlight into the vacant eyes, there was no reaction. He could have been dead, except that his mouth kept producing a child's voice. "No, don't you go away. I won't let you leave me. Please stop it hurting. It hurts so."